For many of you parents at home, when playtime is over in a household of boys and girls, Barbie gets tossed into the jumbled toy box with G.I. Joe, the fast cars and the cute ponies are all thrown in together, the stuffed animals sleep happily with the fierce plastic dinosaurs. Even though such toys were bought in different aisles of the department store, boys' stuff and girls' stuff, their fate is to end up all in the same box, just like in Toy Story. So whose idea was it to segregate the toys in the toy store, even though they all get mixed up when they become toy stories? Well, Target stores, in response to online consumer shaming, says there should be no toy segregation anymore. Target has decided to go along with a trend taking hold elsewhere. A Let Toys Be Toys movement in Britain is changing how some department stores there categorize play items. Some religious conservatives think they know where the practice of separating girl and boy toys came from. Franklin Graham, reacting to the Target decision this week, said it was Jesus who arranged the toys when he spoke in the Bible, Matthew 19, verse 4, "Have you not read that he who made them at the beginning made them male and female?" You know, I didn't know Jesus ever worked at Target.
This is Wendy calling from Flushing. I think it is time that we revamp our approach to childhood toys. Because considering my 3.5-year-old daughter, she's all about dinosaurs, which I know are gender neutral, but any dinosaur t-shirt I've ever found is in the boy section. And also, I have a 14-month-old son who loves nothing more than to pour me pretend tea in his older sister's purple tea set.
This is Catherine from Dallas. What difference does it make whether a doll is pink or blue or a truck is blue or pink? Kids play with toys, period.
Lise Elliott is a neuroscientist and author of Pink Brain, Blue Brain, How Small Differences Grow into Troublesome Gaps and What We Can Do About It. She says the discovery of gender by little kids is a small, unpredictable mystery with big consequences.
Far and away, the bigger influence over toy preference is social learning. And the reason we know that is when kids are young and before they go to preschool, and particularly if they don't have parents that are training them what to play with, they will play with everything. Kids are very exploratory. They get bored with one toy and they'll move on to the next, assuming nobody's looking over their shoulder, staring at them for playing with the wrong color toy. And once kids go to preschool and they're in large groups of peers who've been more indoctrinated into the pink or blue, that's when they start to shun the so-called gender inappropriate toy.
So Target may be onto something here in terms of, you know, separating toys, you know, may actually reduce sales, that if you mix them up, there's less of that feeling of having someone look over your shoulder if you're a boy staring at the girls' aisle and a girl staring at the boys' aisle. There's less anxiety. You can just choose exactly what you want to play with rather than worry about the category.
Well, exactly. I mean, it's a smart move because we know there's a lot of books out now about boys who are not fitting into the absolute masculine model, and, you know, with the whole transgender movement, who love pink and sparkly. There's a book called My Princess Boy. There's other clothing lines now that allow boys to wear pink and allow girls to wear shirts with dinosaurs on them and space images. Most people think that the gender segregation of toys actually was fueled by manufacturers so that they could essentially sell twice as many toys. Because if something like a bicycle or a lunchbox or a toy phone comes in two different colors, you know, an older sister's not going to be able to hand that down to a younger brother, and so companies thought they could sell twice as much.
Oh, that's interesting. I mean, is it possible that having this non-segregated world of gender items, of toys, et cetera, will allow children to explore their ambiguities about gender without having a lot of anxiety, and that parents can see things differently than just they're being put into a category that they don't like, that there's somehow a different way of coming forward with one's own particular, gender ambiguity, be it transgender, be it sexual preference, that sort of thing?
You know, I don't actually think that breaking down the boy and girl aisles at Target or anywhere else is going to suddenly increase the number of, you know, transgender children.
No.
The truth is that what you play with doesn't shape your sexuality. It doesn't shape your gender identity. But what it does do is help your brain practice certain skills. So if you're playing with blocks and building toys, Legos, you're going to develop a certain set of spatial skills that's very helpful when you get around to math class and geometry and physics. And if you're going to play with baby dolls, you're going to develop a certain set of nurturing skills that's going to be very handy when you get around to being a parent. So I just view toys as a big, huge playground that allows children to exercise every part of their brain. And if you draw a sharp line and only let certain children play with certain toys and vice versa, you're going to limit their skills down the line.
Finally, I'm amazed. I have three girls and two boys at, you know, how the conditioning can actually get through, even if as parents you think you're trying to prevent these categories from being apparent to kids. They get signals very, very subtly and conclude things that you never thought you taught them.
Yes, right. So gender, as we understand it, is actually a spectrum. And we all have certain features that are masculine and feminine to different degrees. But children don't get that. They're little minds think much more clearly in opposites. So gender is actually one of the first opposites they learn. Even before they're 1 year of age, children understand the difference between male and female faces and voices. And so once they get to this age close to three, where they're starting to figure out their own gender, it's a very black and white or pink and blue kind of issue. You're either one thing or the other thing. If you wear pink, that makes you a girl, no matter what you're wearing under your underwear. And so it can be very frustrating for parents to try to teach children the nuance when everything in the culture is screaming, you know, boy or girl.
Lise Elliott is Associate Professor of Neuroscience at the Chicago Medical School and author of Pink Brain, Blue Brain, How Small Differences Grow into Troublesome Gaps and What We Can Do About It. Thanks, Lise.
Thank you.
What do you think, Rochester, New York? Change the stigma. Dolls teach boys empathy. Trucks teach girls they can be tough. I don't know. In my neighborhood, boys launched Barbies into the neighbor's yard with catapults and girls loaded trucks with stuffed bunnies and baby dolls. Livermore, California, keep making blue toys and pink toys and let kids choose to play with whatever they want. How can it possibly matter what color a toy is? Girls can play with trucks. Boys can play with dolls. If it makes them happy, why would anyone question that?
Larry Mayer, Staten Island. By providing gender-specific play materials to our children before they clearly understand how their gender affects the social order, does a disservice by prescribing socially dictated gender roles. This is why there is great disparity in adulthood between men and women in who enters which occupations. My answer is definitely not to gender-specify play materials in early childhood development.
Keep the conversation going. Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE or comment at thetakeaway.org.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.